Hello and welcome to the High Level Hacks podcast. Today we have a very, very, very special guest, one of my huge and big mentors, and I'm so honored and pleased that he took the time before one of his big seminars. It's Dr. Joe Dispenza. Basically, to say it in a few very easy words, Dr. Joe can tell you how you can make the law of attraction work for you, how the scientific proof is given, and that's what they do. They do many, many tests. He's scientist, he's lecturer, he's best-selling author, and he basically shows us how we can connect with our higher self and how this works for the brain people and not the heart people that say, I trust him, but he brings the scientific proof in all his workshops. So thank you very much for being here, Dr. Joe.
You're welcome. I'm happy to be with you.
And I just thought about Rosenheim when we met in 2013, and I remember back then that you said, most of the emails that you receive start with the sentence, you won't believe what just happened, because it's so ridiculous what happens to people after your workshops and seminars. And I would like to know, how does it make you feel to receive emails and letters like that, where people thank you to over because I overcame sicknesses and stuff like that?
Well, I mean, my interest is to prove to people that they have within their reach all the tools necessary to make significant changes in their bodies or in their lives. And my passion is to take complex scientific information, and science is the contemporary language of mysticism, and to simplify it in a way that's translatable. And I now know that if you give people that information based on science, and you combine a little quantum physics with a little neuroscience, with a little neuroendocrinology, with a little psychoneuroimmunology, the mind-body connection, and you throw in some epigenetics, that all of those sciences point the finger at possibility. And as we learn new information, we make new connections in our brain. And there's physical evidence when we learn something that is left in our brain, footprints of consciousness, that reflect our interaction in the environment. But if learning is making those connections, then remembering is being able to maintain them and sustain them. So I now know if you give them the right information, and then they can turn to the person next to them and they can explain it. If they can explain that information and create a model of understanding, they're beginning to install the neurological hardware in their brain in preparation for an experience. So the more people understand what they're doing and why they're doing it, the how gets easier. So we start off with theory. We start off with philosophy. We start off with intellectual knowledge. But as people begin to share that information, if you can't explain that model to me, then it's not wired in your brain. But if you can explain it now, the process of repeating it and understanding it is firing and wiring new circuits in the brain. Now the person is priming their brain for a future event. If I can set up the conditions in the environment and give people the proper instructions, and they can get their behaviors to match their intentions, their actions equal to their thoughts, if they can get their mind and body working together, they're going to have a new experience. Now, the experience of what they're having, embracing in that moment, enriches the philosophical circuits in the brain. More connections are laid down, is what experience does. But the moment those neurons string into place, into networks, the brain makes a chemical. And that chemical is called a feeling or an emotion. And the moment they start to feel whole or unlimited or empowered or invincible or compassionate or have a love for life, now they're teaching their body chemically to understand what their mind is intellectually understood. So we can say that knowledge is for the mind and experience is for the body. And in that moment, they're embodying the truth of that philosophy. And now the research shows that genes don't create disease. It's a fact that it's the environment that signals the gene that begins to change its expression. Well, the end product of an experience is called an emotion. So when a person begins to feel the emotion from the experience, they're literally rewriting their biological program and signaling new genes in new ways. And genes are like Christmas tree lights. They're turning on and off all the time. So the moment the person starts to have a new experience, that's new information. And that new information begins to regulate genes. And genes make proteins. And proteins are responsible for the structure and function of your body. And the expression of proteins is the expression of life. And in that moment, they can literally downregulate a gene for disease and upregulate a gene for health. We've measured it. So then, that's great. Doing it once means that you should be able to do it again. So if you're able to reproduce any experience, it's going to become a skill or a habit. So the repetition of an experience begins to neurochemically condition your mind and body to begin to work as one. In other words, when you've done something so many times that your body now knows how to do it as well as your mind, now it's innate in you. It's second nature. It's who you are. It's who you're becoming. And that's my passion, because when a person reaches that level, now they're beginning to master that philosophy. They're embodying it. It's part of their fabric. And it becomes almost a subconscious program. It's just naturally who they become. They know how they do it, but they don't know how they know how, because it's become an automatic process. So when I see emails where people start off with, "You're not going to believe this," in the beginning, it was exciting, but it's happening so many times now that we have a community of people that are applying a very specific formula, and that all of the research that we've done over the last 8 years has helped us to refine that formula. And if you follow the formula and eliminate everything else that's not part of the formula and refine it, it will become a skill. And then you'll have access to begin to make those changes. So for me, we're at a point right now where so many of our students are experiencing the miraculous, not just like changing their thyroid hormones, although that's important, and that's, we've gotten a lot of those. But now we're talking about brain tumors disappearing. We're talking about blind people seeing, not once, not twice, not three times. We're talking about deaf people that can't hear, all of a sudden get their hearing back. Tumors shrinking. In 7 days, the person comes with a tumor. At the end of the event, the tumor's gone. I mean, these are the miraculous. And I guess for me, I never thought in my lifetime, really, that I would be witnessing what I'm witnessing today. So how do I feel about that? I'm super humble. I'm super empowered and excited. And my interest is to push the envelope. In other words, if you just healed yourself of some chronic health condition, stage 4 cancer, and we have a lot of those, then the next question is, if I healed myself, why can I not heal somebody else? And then once we've developed that skill, we see people healing other people. It's happening all the time in our work. They understand the science behind that. Then the question is, well, if I'm in the field, and there's in the field, I'm connected to everyone and everything, do I really need to be present to heal a person who's sick? You know, all I need is a picture of them. And if I'm with a group of people and we connect to that field, then I don't need to go there to heal them. So now we have people, as an example, we had a person in our event in Cancun in June whose brother had a massive stroke and went into a coma. He was in the hospital for 2 weeks, and she was there, and she called up her healing group, said, "Here's the picture of my brother. We've healed somebody in the last event. We should be able to heal him. Let's go to the next level of philosophical understanding." In 1 hour after that healing, he came out of his coma. He left the hospital that night. Now, that's the next level. So then you keep developing through experience. In other words, if you don't have the experience of healing yourself or healing another, you can't do that. Really, it's methodical, right? So we have a group of people that are stepping out of the known and pushing the envelope. And because they're not afraid to fail, because they know how to get beyond themselves, because they know how to connect, because they know how to open their hearts, they put it all together. And you keep adding more of the formula and the skill, sooner or later, you're going to keep doing the uncommon. And that's my interest.
I love that. I mean, that's bigger than I could have ever imagined. It goes, it's amazing. And if I get it right, the emotion is more or less one of the main triggers to make it work. So if you have a very brain-driven person like myself, And in some parts, I disconnected from my emotions just to protect me in regular life. And it's a challenge for me to reconnect to my old emotions that I already had in circumstances that would help. Do you have any advice?
Yeah, well, God, I have a lot of advice around that. Because 70% of the time, people in their waking lives, they live in a very protective state. They live in a state of stress or in a state of survival. In fact, it's such a program that we don't know that we're doing this. We're always spanning the environment to determine if it's safe or not. And if something appears out of the predictable or unknown, it alerts us. And we move into a state of arousal and we begin to turn on the very systems that begin to say danger, threat, possible scenario that's not safe. And when that happens, we literally begin to anticipate an outcome. And when we do that, we're always preparing for what could go wrong. And we begin to create the emotions ahead of the experience of what happens if it goes wrong, whether it's fear, anxiety, worry, sadness, pain. We do that unconsciously. That's what a program is. And that becomes the habit. So if you're living in a world where men have to provide and show a certain amount of success and be competitive, then you're not going to open your heart. It's not a time to do that. It's a time to survive and thrive in an environment. And yet, in our work, I see men that if they practice opening their hearts, and it's just being a child again, being a boy again, being curious, being wondering, being free, being allowing yourself to let go. And for men, we have to lay down the very thing we used our whole life to get what we want for something greater to occur. Now, the side effect of that when men truly do this, I've seen them instantaneously heal from things, from serious heart conditions where they couldn't take more than 40 steps without having an angina reaction, severe chest pain, to stage 4 cancer. The house of cards, when it falls, energy moves into a different place and the body begins to release 13 or 1400 different chemicals that begin to restore and repair the body. So to the intellectual mind, if a man begins to understand that when they open their heart, they could heal. When they open their heart, they can lead from a different consciousness, that it's actually an advantage and they understand the science of why in their rational mind. Then they go after it. Now they're in hot pursuit of it because it makes sense to them. But there's not a lot of evidence or support in our environment for men to be vulnerable. And yet the latest research shows that vulnerability is one of the 5 top qualities for a great leader. So when men begin to think this through, they start to slowly by slowly, just like a flower blooming, petal by petal, they start trusting a little bit more. They start opening up a little bit more. They start getting happier. They start breaking down the wall, the facade that they've created to have an appearance of being a certain way for the world and yet feeling so empty inside of them. They start realizing that the joy that they want never came from success, never came from wealth or popularity or whatever men do, but it really comes from within. So we give them numerous opportunities to practice, numerous opportunities to connect. And the heart opens also when you care for another person, when you care for other people, when you give, when you experience gratitude. So a lot of times men, when we do our healings, when we heal other people, you got to be in your heart. And in a very indirect and sneaky way, I know that when I get men in that state and they just, their passion to truly give, that's why they provide with such intensity, is framed in a different way, their heart opens up. And then they become more like a child again. They become free and relaxed and less rigid. So it goes against the program, and it just requires a little bit of knowledge, a greater understanding, me pushing them to that point where they start really going for it, and then setting up enough experiences for them to have it. Now, by the same means, you look at a person that could be a female that was abused as a child. She doesn't understand why she's lives her life a certain way, but it's that experience that has confused her or caused her to close off from feeling certain things as well. And when she gets in situations that are unsafe, that create similar emotions, she reverts back to that little child that triggers something, and she doesn't understand why she does that. And so when you give somebody like that enough opportunities to feel safe, they're going to come up against that wall, that event. And when they move through it, their body is going to experience the freedom it felt before that event 30 years ago. And there'll be a complete reorganization of information in the body. There'll be a reorganization of body's physiology. So then when you see a person then stand on the stage, who's a man who's in his late 60s, who has a severe heart condition, and he tells his story of his struggles and how hard it was for him to open his heart and how unhealthy he was and all the things he did medically, all the things he did with his diet, matter to matter, all the things he did with psychotherapy that really helped him to understand why he is the way he is, but never really giving him the instructions, the formula of how to get out of it. And he tells his story of what happened to him, and he articulates it beautifully. And you look out in the audience of 1,000 people, and you see men crying because he's reaching them on some level. And he doesn't look like a movie star, and he doesn't look particularly young or successful or looks just like everybody else, just a common person. And he tells the story of what happened to him during the walking meditation, and how he experienced in one walking meditation that he could walk the whole entire beach for the first time in 20 years without any chest pain. And he was doubting, like, this can't be. What happened? Well, he got so involved in becoming a different persona, a different personality, that he left the old person behind. And his body was believing that he was literally in the new life. And all of a sudden, in a matter of seconds, his body begins to respond. Now, he articulated in great detail his doubt in front of an audience, because when that happens, you know, you start disbelieving. So he goes out the next day and he says, now that I can walk, today is the day. Why not become somebody else, to become my future self? So now, in the same passion he did to provide for his children, to provide for his family, to create a good life for himself and his loved ones, he goes out with that same passion, but he directs it inward to himself. He walks on that beach. I was standing right next to him. He says to the audience, in one moment, I felt the level of love that I had never felt in my entire life. And he said, and then I heard somebody screaming. And then I realized it was me. That I had never, the energy that was in my body caused me to, I had to let it out. And he said, and I had never felt anything like, I was standing right next to him. And he tells that story to 1,000 people. And I'm watching the men in the audience moved, like moved out of their normal self. Not from some Hollywood production, not something from some movie, but evidence. Evidence right in front of you. It's like the 4-minute mile. Once the 4-minute mile is broken, or was broken, everybody started, in a matter of weeks, everybody started breaking the 4-minute mile, because it was we crossed the level of consciousness, a limit, and that was permission for everybody to believe it as well. That's what's happening in our work. So men then, when they watch a man have that moment, that's all they need. Because once they see it, there's evidence. Then not only do we leave a footprint in consciousness that another man can do it, a step for them in the field to step into, but when there's evidence in three-dimensional reality, you cannot forget that person. And you say to yourself, Well, if he can do it, I can do it. And if he's 66 years old and he couldn't take more than 40 steps and I'm got a bad knee or I'm walking with a crane or a crutch or whatever, well, hell, all I got to do is do what he did. And all of a sudden you have these people as a community beginning to unify, a living organism, a group of a species of human beings that are beginning to understand that there's more things that are possible. And all of a sudden it becomes a collective consciousness. And then the miracles keep happening. So all we need is that one person in the beginning. And when they tell their story in humility and in grace and in simplicity, in curiosity, it gives people permission to begin to step out. And so I'm so proud of our community. I'm so proud of our culture, because we have men now that know how to open their hearts and they can lead with an open heart. And God, we need enough of those. And we have women who have taken care of their families and sacrificed and compromised and held things together and put themselves second for their children and for their family and their loved ones, and never really had a moment to get clear on what they wanted. And now they're turning their love inward and they're getting very clear on their intention, and they're doing amazing things. So it requires the balance between our head and our hearts. We can't not have our brains involved and just open our hearts. We got to direct that energy. That's what our brain does. It's a compass. It directs us somewhere. And the emotion is the energy that drives us there. So when you have coherence in the brain, coherence in the heart, now you have greater effects on the nature of reality.
Would you then say that techniques like hypnosis, NLP techniques to change belief-based statements, stuff from the past, it's not actually necessary if they use your method? You should just focus on your future and your future self rather than playing around with your old things?
Well, let me answer that on two levels, just because I'm an investigator, I'm a researcher, and I want to simplify it. And I now know that the closer that I get to truth, the simpler it has to be. The more complex we make it, the more we're going to analyze. And we can't get there in analysis, because analysis is trying to figure it out. Now, there's nothing wrong with analyzing things, but when it comes time to create or to change, you got to lay that down. So I think from a very practical and experience-based model, that people have to begin to embrace knowledge and information before they get about doing anything. So I'm not so interested in labels, NLP, hypnosis, because I think people get stuck in trying to create a limited model. What I love is truth. And there are similarities, whether you're talking about NLP or you're talking about the Bible or the Quran or you're talking about hypnosis, there are elements of those things that have helped people. Now, I don't study NLP, although I'm invited to NLP conferences to explain the neuroscience and biology of personal change and transformation. I started my journey studying hypnosis and hypnotherapy, because what separates the conscious mind from the subconscious mind is the analytical mind. And when you teach people or help people get beyond their analytical mind, now you enter the operating system where you can begin to reprogram a person. So there are elements of all of those things that are pieces of important truths. But I wouldn't categorize them, because the moment I say NLP, the moment I say chakra, the moment I say hypnosis, the moment I say Jesus, the moment you say Kabbalah, the moment you say something, you're going to divide an audience. Because some people are going to say, oh, I tried that, it didn't work, I don't even know what that means. So I'm very, very aware of all of that. And I'm very particular in the language that I use because I don't want people to categorize that. I want it to be in a realm where they can say, well, that's kind of like this, or that's kind of like what Jesus said, or that's kind of like what I learned in NLP. I think I heard that in the Kabbalah somewhere, or I saw that on, you know, the History Channel. It doesn't matter. I don't want to take this and put it in a box. I want to keep evolving it. I want to keep changing it. There are similarities. Truth or threads that in history that have been laid. And I go to great measures to not categorize it, because the moment you put it in a box, you're running it through your neurological network of the past, and then all of a sudden you diminish its effects. So I keep it fresh. I never use any of those words or languages, because those words were great 2,000 years ago. Those words were consistent with the language of 5,000 years ago. And I've been at religious conferences where I've been invited and watched great religious scholars argue about a word, argue about the meaning of a word. So after an hour, I'll say to them, well, let's make up a new word. Well, let's make up a new word that everybody can agree on. Forget the old word. Let's come up with a new word that everybody can agree on. Now, that's a more important conversation, don't you think, than the conversation of the past. So for me, I'm not so interested in talking about history. I'm interested in making history. And this is a time in history where it's not enough to know. This is a time in history to know how. And you could be black, you could be white, you could be old, you could be young, you could be sick, you could be a vegetarian, you could be in shape, you could be out of shape. You could be rich, you could be poor, you could be successful, you could have never, ever had any experience in meditation or personal transformation. It doesn't matter. I have seen it on all shapes, all sizes, all colors, all cultures. Sick people, healthy people, young people, old people. All you got to do is apply the formula. That's it. Nobody's excluded from the phenomena. And my job is to not create any exclusivity. My job is to create community. And science creates community. It's the language. It's the contemporary language we use.
That's very interesting. Would you say it's smart to focus on one goal? I mean, if you're sick, obviously, it's smart to focus on getting healthy. But if you have a regular life and you say, you know, I would like to have the classical stuff, more money, more wealth, more love, more joy. Would you say in those meditations it's smart to focus on different goals, or should it rather be the big goal, like a big vision I have for my life, that all the steps on the way are just marks I will pass at one point?
Well, let's answer that on two levels too, because people come to our workshops for all different reasons. Some people come because they're sick. Some people come because they want more money. Some people want more a new job, a new opportunity, a new career, a new relationship. Some people want the mystical. The people come for all kinds of reasons. To me, I don't care. What I care about is that they latch on to a vision and they learn how to create. Whatever drives them to that elegant moment where they're so present and so passionate about what they want, and they have a clear intention, a clear vision, a coherent brain, and they have an elevated emotion combined with it, that they create heart coherence. And now they're broadcasting a whole new energy into the field. And whatever we broadcast into the field is our experiment with destiny. So I want people to know the how. Because we have plenty of people that have made millions and millions of dollars that were living in the backseat of their car or filed bankruptcy. We have plenty of people that were stage 4 cancer, serious health conditions that are healed. But really, people think they come for those reasons. But we come for wholeness. That's why we come. That when we feel so whole and so happy with ourselves, so connected to something greater, if you feel wholeness, it's impossible for you to want. How can you want when you're whole? When you're whole, you feel like you have everything. So I want people to reach that point where they feel so whole that they no longer want, and that's when the magic happens. Teaching them that allows them to understand that when they come back to their senses, they open their eyes. They're not looking for the experience. They feel like it's already happened. And if you feel like it's already happened, why would you be looking for it? Then if your body is conditioned emotionally into that future, you're not separate from the energy of your future. You're connected from it to it. But the moment you get in traffic and you start getting angry, you get on the line at the bank and you start getting impatient, or you're sitting in a staff meeting, you start judging a coworker, you just disconnected from the energy of the future, and now you're back to the energy of your past, and you've done nothing wrong. You just lost your connection to the future. Now, the importance of that is to notice that you're disconnected. And if you say to me, well, that person made me feel this way and think this way, I'd say, oh my gosh, you're back to the unconscious program of being a victim in your life. The victim is saying that someone or something is controlling how I think and feel. But a person who's producing outcomes in their life, all of a sudden they say, wow, the way I'm thinking and feeling is creating outcomes in my life. Now I'm a creator in my life, and now I believe less that I'm a victim of my life. Point one. Point number two is that people think that they want certain things because they're experiencing lack. And so they have to go about becoming the very person. So then if we reframe it and you say, oh, I really want to be wealthy. I want all my needs met. And I'll say, really, why do you want to be wealthy? And they'll say, because I want freedom. I'd say, okay, well, let's focus on freedom. So now the person understands the sponsoring thought or the emotion. Why would you wait for your wealth to feel free? That's the Newtonian model of reality, of cause and effect. Waiting for someone or something out there to take away this emptiness or lack. And what if I'm feeling this emotion? This emotion is influencing certain thoughts, and how I think and feel creates my life. If I'm living in lack, I'm not going to create anything new. But if I say to you, hey, when you become that person, once you become it, then your reality is going to reorganize itself. Instead of living by cause and effect, let's teach you how to cause and effect. So then the person then is no longer interested in getting something in their environment. When they realize it's about who they become. And all of a sudden now the emphasis or the interest is in becoming that person. And we have a week with those people. And I want them to walk as it, sit as it, stand as it, lay down as it. I want them to get in the habit of walking from their room to the ballroom. It's become the new habit. That's why when we do our work, we're doing sitting meditations, we're doing standing and walking meditations, we're doing lying down meditations. I want it to become a new habit. I want them to become that person. So then this happens thousands of times. People come for certain reasons. They come to heal their disease. And once they heal their disease, they realize it was never about healing their disease. You know what it was? It was about unlearning, breaking the habit, deprogramming, becoming conscious of their unconscious thoughts, becoming aware of their automatic habits and behaviors, noticing that they've been living in unworthiness and guilt for the last 25 years. But they're so used to living by that feeling, they don't even know it's guilt. It just feels like who they are. So point number two is that becoming that person requires you to stop being the old person. That's the work. And so when people come with a passion and enthusiasm to overcome that old self, they're going to understand then that people who live in the past are asleep in the present. And they have to die. That old person has to die. And the dying of that old personality is an uncomfortable process. But if you apply the formula, when you're in that uncomfortable process, you will literally begin to become somebody else. So when they start becoming that person, they'll say, I thought I wanted wealth, but I really don't want wealth. I want this. And all of a sudden, here come the synchronicities, the opportunities, the serendipities, the coincidences, you know. The wonderful, wonderful events start unfolding in their life. And they're going to say to you, I'm not doing anything. Because they took care of the past personality. Because your personality creates your personal reality. Your personality is made up of how you think, how you act, and how you feel. So then if they're no longer thinking the same way, no longer acting the same way, no longer feeling the same way, they're thinking differently, they're acting differently, they're feeling differently, and they return back into their lives, they're able to maintain that modified state of mind and body. That's the new habit. They're embodying that energy. Then all of a sudden, people in their life are going to say, something's different about you. Something something happened to you, because the person's not showing up in the unconscious, predictable habit of themselves. And they're outstanding because they're not reacting emotionally. They've overcome that sitting in their meditations. They're no longer judging. They took care of those circuits, the hardwired programs. They're no longer blaming or complaining or making excuses because they sat for 2 hours and I let them sit in that emotion and those habits until they finally got beyond them. Now, that's the work. So that person that they've had to conquer, that person they've had to overcome, that they had to become conscious of so they would not go unconscious again, the side effect of that is self-love. The side effect of that is a level of satisfaction with yourself that allows you to be satisfied with others. And people who judge themselves will judge others. People who hate themselves will hate others. People who are impatient with themselves will be impatient with others. People who abuse themselves will abuse others. People who love themselves will love others. People who feel a gratitude for their effort will have gratitude authentically in their life. People who are joyful because they sat in the fire and something changed are going to naturally be joyful, not because they need a car or a wardrobe or a vacation to feel that. They feel joyful because they really feel joyful. It's not coming from out there. It's coming from in here. They will be joyful in their lives, and it'll be real. So we're just seeing a community of people reaching that consciousness, and they're not relying on somebody out there to bring them joy. They're joyful because they're in love with who they are.
Is the self-love the secret key to a happy relationship in your mind? Because if I work only on myself and my partner works on herself, you know, it's two separate things. How can we combine that?
Well, I believe that that there are degrees of self-love. And people confuse self-love with pleasure. And it's not the same. That the more we are content and love ourselves, the less need we have in our environment for love. See that? And love and need has been very confusing for a lot of people. So if you have two individuals, and by the way, relationships aren't just with one person. We get different things from different people that we have in our lives, and we shouldn't limit our relationship to one person. Not to say that you can't be in an intimate relationship. I'm saying that we have numerous relationships that are equally as important in the grand scope of who we are as souls on the journey. We just can't love one person and despise everybody else. It's got to be consistent, right? So, but in a relationship where we're talking about men and women, the number one thing is having the same purpose. That if you have a purpose to truly be your best, and you have a person in your life that wants that same thing, well, you're heading in the same direction. And if your passion is to change the world, if your passion is to make a difference, if your passion is to end world hunger, if your passion is to resolve global warming, your passion is to lead by example, whatever your passion is, to have an abundant life, doesn't matter to me. And those two people share that very same purpose, then they're moving in the same direction. If they understand then that evolution means that there will be certain things that we can agree to agree on, and that I'm going to bring my best to the relationship, and you bring your best to the relationship, then we have something in common. And when I'm not at my best, I'm going to excuse myself and not ask you to make me feel better. I'm going to make sure that I'm sovereign enough that when I make my way back to connect with you, that we are going to celebrate our triumphs. You have your world, I have my world. Let's go. And then when we connect, let's make sure that we reflect what we've learned. If I'm stuck and I need a perspective, I want to know your perspective, but only when I ask. If I'm ready to ask, then give me your greatest truth. That's what great relationships do. We support one another in that way. And then it's a give and take, which means then mistakes will be made. There will be challenges. You are going to show certain aspects of a program when you're switched on. No problem with that. But the question is, how long are you going to stay there? Because if you stay there, then you may say something, I want this, with your conscious mind, but your subconscious mind is saying something else. People awakening on the path, on the journey, it takes great effort to nurture the space for that kind of evolution. But people who do this well, that are self-aware, do not have to work in a relationship. I will not work in a relationship. That's not my job. If I'm working in a relationship, then it's not flowing. If you bring your best and I bring my best and we celebrate our efforts every single day, we talk about what we've learned, we talk about if we had another opportunity, how we could do it better. If I allow you to take your thought all the way to the end and I say, then how can I support you? How can I bring that out in you? What would be the best thing? And if you lose that sense of purpose or you fall from grace, how can I, in that moment, what do you want me to tell you if I notice it? To tell me the exact words, like, you're doing it again. Okay, okay, okay. Not like, you're doing it again, but like, hey, hey, you're doing it again. So that the person can, oh, get back on purpose. Now that begins to create a great bond. And that bond is built on true love. So when you have a relationship where you are overcoming needs, you're overcoming the belief of the way relationships should be based on our observation of our own parents and the way they treated one another. When you really are working for something greater than yourself as a purpose or a truth, and you share that same purpose, there's a bond that happens automatically that's intangible, that requires less work. It's not working on the relationship. It's about working on yourself. And I think that we have in our community people who demonstrate that beautifully. And the side effect of it is that they have magic in their lives.
It's truly amazing. And I just can say, let's start right away. We have 1 hour, or not even more, 1 hour to go to your advanced workshop. It's a four-day workshop here in Berlin. And yes. Let's go to work. I would have a trillion more questions, but you need to get ready for stage. And I have a lot to work on right now in my own mindset. And before I ask you a final short question, where can people find more about you?
Gosh, well, my website is drjoedispenza.com. There's a ton of resources there. We are pretty much all over the world at this point, running events. So we're running this event here in Berlin, which is an advanced follow-up. These are people that have done a lot of work. I'm going to challenge them to the next level. People who are here because they want to be here. And that's a great audience to work with. So drjoedispenza.com is probably the easiest way to get a hold of me.
Wonderful. Last question. What's the most important thing based on your experience in life, in work, in general, to be successful in life, whatever success means for you?
I think that when people reach the point where they, and this has happened to me and it's happened to many people in our community, where they reach a certain level, a certain status where they have everything they need, the fundamental thing that happens to those people is that they start thinking about, how am I going to make a difference in the world? What legacy? What am I going to leave? How am I going to make a difference or change the world in some way? So we think we want all those things, but really what we want to do is really contribute. So I think when we have a purpose that's bigger than us, that's the highest form of motivation, mission motivation, duty motivation, purpose motivation. When we have a selfless vision that's bigger than us, I think we're wired to be that. That the living organism called the species of human beings, it is a living organism. And in this current era, the age of selfish individuality has to die. That we are a species, and the species of a living organism takes care of one another. They heal one another. They educate one another. They teach one another. They inspire one another. They give to one another. They serve one another. That's That's what a living organism does. They cooperate, communicate, collaborate with one another. That's what it does. And so we are wired to be communal. We are wired to create common unity, community. And that community is built on the frequency of love. And when you come from love, you come from a different consciousness. It's no longer about you. You feel so amazing. You feel this feeling that isn't going away. That the only thing you want to do is have other people feel what you're feeling. And the only way we do that is to give. We say, I feel so amazing. I want you to feel the way I feel. So I don't need this. Here, take that. That kind of community goes counter to the current situation in the world where everything's breaking down. But this is a time where we have to demonstrate what that new community looks like. So when you have connection, when you have community, when you have true friendship, the person's really just giving because there's something unusual about them and you're worthy enough to receive. And you feel that feeling of receiving that you want to give to somebody else. You create a very different consciousness. You create a common unity or a community that's bonded and connected in the frequency of love. And then when love is the common frequency, it's very difficult to break that community up because it's the glue that holds them together. So that's my vision of where I'd like to go with this work.
Amen. I totally agree. So let's be the stone that we throw into the water and create a ripple effect. I wish you a wonderful workshop. I will be one of those 1,000 changing my world and then the bigger world. Thank you very much, Dr. Joe. All the best and keep up the great work.
Thank you so much.